Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 12, recorded July 22nd, 2009. All right, welcome everybody to the Aquarimax podcast, and now we're going to talk a little bit about... what?
Wingless fruit flies.
Well, wingless and flightless fruit flies, because there really is a difference. But before we talk about the difference between wingless and flightless fruit flies, we should talk about...
how are the wingless and the fruit flies, wingless and flightless fruit flies different from winged fruit flies?
Well, these are descended from normal flighted fruit flies, winged fruit flies, but they're descended from mutations that were discovered in laboratories, and these... mutations were perpetuated because, of course, they're much easier to deal with when they can't fly. And then these have found their way into hobbyist hands and have been there for many years as fish food and food for other animals as well. Basically, there are two different types of non-flighted fruit flies. The wingless ones, often called vestigial winged, because usually there's some sort of wing structure there, but often it's underdeveloped to the point where it can't be used at all and is barely visible. They might just be some little sort of knobs of wing tissue and nothing much else. And then they do have flightless fruit flies that are have wings that are sized, that look like they're the right size to fly, but for one reason or another they can't fly. Their muscles are not functional or something like that. So both varieties could easily be termed flightless because they don't fly, but they use these terms to distinguish from those that have very little wing structure, the wingless ones, and the flightless ones, which have fully formed but non-functional wings. And there are two commonly seen species. We have Drosophila melanogaster and Drosophila hydei, and these differ in various ways in size. The D. melanogaster is much smaller than the hydei. And the melanogaster is also much more fecund, you might say. It reproduces much more quickly and produces more young than the hydei variety, which is... those are the two main differences. The size, the hydei are bigger, and then the hydei also take longer to reproduce. There are also some variations in... wing type and color among these different types. So you can find more than one type of melanogaster, one type that is flightless but has developed wings, and one type that is wingless, for example. And then there are at least a couple of different color varieties of hydei. I think there's the wild color, and then there's a golden color, and so on. So there's various types.
Okay. Going on to who would these be useful for, with these different sizes and things, are they going to be better for different kinds of fish?
That's a good question. Well, both types are still pretty small. You might say that the hydei is something like, I'm not, you know, this isn't exact here, but about twice as big as melanogaster. And so that's a good question. Using these the flies, there are quite a few different species and sizes of fish that can take them, but there will be some differences in the sizes. Just in a general way, live bearers love these flies. Betas, killifish, lots of midwater fish. I had neons and cardinal tetras that liked them. African dwarf frogs really, really liked them. If you're going to raise some other things that are not fish, too, I mean, there's still many other fish that will take them beyond those that I mentioned. But there are applications with insects, people who raise, for example, a praying mantis egg case. The baby mantids will take these flies and do fairly well on them as a first food. Poison dart frogs, these are a staple food with poison dart frogs, and so on. But there are differences. For example, the hydei flies are a little too big for half-grown guppies, or maybe even for male guppies. Female guppies can take them, the adult female guppies, but you know, a smaller guppy can't take a hydei. An adult betta can certainly take hydei, but a younger betta would have to start with melanogaster when it's quite a bit smaller than that. So yes, you do have to pay attention to which fly fits with which fish. And something while we're talking about this too, if you have one betta and you want to give it live food, I suggest you start with something other than these wingless fruit flies, because culturing them is ridiculous as far as numbers go. I mean, you will have large numbers of flies, and a culture...
The beta won't be able to eat them all.
Right. You'd have a grossly overfed beta and still billions of flies that you had no idea what to do with. So if you have a lot of fish, then these are a good idea. If you don't have a lot of fish, this is probably an overkill type of culture, because you have to use the flies or do something with them in order to keep the culture from crashing. So just be careful. You might have, and when the culture's in peak production, you might have easily more than 100 flies per day that you have to dispose of in some way. So you need to make sure that you're prepared to deal with that. Yeah. Now, when I've cultured them and had tons of tanks to put them in and you know, more several hundred fish to eat them, it's not been a difficulty. But right, if you have one beta or even six, this is not what you want to do. Only do it if you have a lot of different fish that will eat them or other creatures that will eat them.
So if they do want to start a culture, where do you go to get a starter culture of these fruit flies?
Well, you can sometimes find them in pet stores. I often find that when you do find cultures at a pet store, they are really old, often dead or nearly dead, and so it doesn't work.
It's like a one-time feeding shot, and it's not going to keep growing, basically.
Well, yeah, some of the bigger box stores will carry little cultures that are in decent shape, but they're basically a try this out, feed your fish with this culture for a while and see if it works for you. And you know, they might have 3 weeks of feeding in them if you get them when they're new and fresh, and a lot less if you get them when they're older. But if you want to start breeding them, these cultures are not a great idea, but they are a good idea, I think, to get those if you want to test it out and see whether this is something that you're interested in, if your fish like it, if it's going to work for you. Yeah, so you could try that out. But if you're going to start culturing them, I do suggest, ideally, you try looking at an online store, an auction, or a biological supply house online, something like that, because that way you can make sure to get nice, fresh cultures, which is very important to make sure you have a healthy culture to start out with. Young, healthy flies that are just coming out of the pupal stage is what you want to be able to start another culture.
Now, how do you know that they're just coming out of the pupal stage?
Well,
what do you look for to know that they're young and healthy?
Okay, if you're going into a store and you want to look at it and you see that, for example, you want to find a culture that really doesn't have any adult flies in it. You find one that has larvae crawling around, that has maybe a few pupae in there.
And what do the pupae look like?
They look, they're sort of an oblong worm-like shape, sort of a, depending on the type and so on, but a sort of a tannish color, and it also depends on how far along they are in their development. They're lighter color when they first start out and get darker as they go. And they have two little projections on one end, sort of like antennae. And these are all plastered all over every surface inside the container. If you have mostly just pupae and larvae, then you're good. You can start with that. If you have a lot of adult flies, that's probably a problem. Now, don't make the mistake of finding, you know, just pupal cases sticking to the side and there being an old culture with dead flies littering the bottom and trying that out. That's not going to work. You want to make sure you have some active larvae in there, and that's a good sign that it's still a healthy culture. But when you buy one from a biological supply house or an online store or something, they typically ship you one in that state, so that's not a problem. It's just in a pet store when you have a problem. I have had success buying them from pet stores, but you need to make sure you get them when they're young. The culture isn't too old.
Okay. And once you have your culture, how do you actually culture them?
Well, you'll need several materials. You need a container that should be escape-proof, ventilated, and clean. You'll need a culture medium. You need to make sure that the nutrients are balanced, that it's easy to do, that it's mold-resistant, and you'll need some yeast to add to that to kickstart. The flies basically feed on the yeast that grows in the culture, kind of like microworms and waltworms, so you need to make sure you do that. And you'll need some sort of climbing surface in most cases. At least it's a good idea. Some people use Excelsior, that wood, shredded wood material. You can use needlepoint canvas. You can use coffee filters. I prefer coffee filters myself. And as far as materials and containers, you can go do it yourself or you can purchase them. I vastly prefer purchasing. It's a lot easier for a lot of reasons. It's cheap, it lasts a long time, it's easier to get a nice escape-proof container with little fuss. The culture medium, I think, is a lot easier to deal with, and so on. So, highly suggest that you find a good company that online that stocks some culture materials. I remember buying about a year's supply of culture materials, everything but the flies, for about $15, I think. And I think it was another maybe $3 to $5 for the shipping. It really wasn't bad at all.
Is there a website or a company that you would recommend, or should we put that in resources?
We can put that in resources too, but Josh's Frogs is a good one. He's a specialist in poison dart frogs, and he's got some great stuff. That's what I the last order I bought was from that one, and I thought everything was great. The lids were escape proof. They were perforated and ventilated perfectly. Nothing could get in, nothing could get out. The culture medium worked great. I had no problems with mold or anything, so great stuff. You can do it yourself, but if you do, like some people use water bottles, and they'll plug them with paper towels with rubber bands over them, and they'll make their own culture medium and use things like vinegar, or try to find some of the bread preservatives to keep mold out and so on. And I've experimented with some of these do-it-yourself recipes and so on, but I would say in terms of the energy I expended and the results that I got, that using the prepared kit is just better. I mean, you can get flies, and I did. I got flies with the other method, but it's just there's so much more return for so much less work if you do your purchased kit.
Okay, so once you have your flies, your container, and your culture medium, and your climbing surface, and all of that good stuff, how do you get this going?
Well, I'll tell you what my typical method, and this is what I got from instructions from kits and reading various websites and so on and trying it out. You get some sort of filtered water is best, or reverse osmosis water or something is often best. You boil it, and you add the culture medium to it, according to whatever directions come with it. They always come with directions. You let it cool somewhat, but not completely, after you've poured it in. So you pour it into the culture container itself hot. You let it cool a little bit, then you add the climbing surface. I like the unbleached coffee filters. They work great. You just fold several of them up and jam them in there so you have a lot of surface area for the flies. It helps them lay eggs. It gives them place to climb, place to molt, place to pupate, all those things. It's good. And then after it's cooled down quite a bit, so it's just a little bit warm to the touch, then you add a little yeast to the top. And it's important to add the yeast early enough so that it's the first thing that colonizes the culture medium. You don't want random molds and so on flying around in the air to land on it and start growing.
How cool does it need to be?
If it's just slightly warm to the touch, that's great. Okay. You know, you think about making bread. If those of you who make bread, just when you touch it, if it feels slightly warm, it's good. If it feels hot and you don't want to keep your hand on it, then it's way too hot. Okay. It'll kill the yeast. Then it's also important to add, and there's a critical mass here, you need about 50 plus newly emerged flies, like we said, within a few days, and hopefully even sooner, within a day of emerging from their pupa is great, but if you have to wait a few days, it's okay, even maybe a week, but I would say that's tops. As soon as they emerge from the pupa, you want to get them in there to the new culture. That's the best way to do it. So what I would do is when I start a culture, I wait until I start seeing a couple of flies hatching from the pupa, and immediately I start another culture so that within a day or so, the culture is ready to go and these other flies, I can add them. So you want at least 50. That's for genetics, because you want, you know, a good mix of different flies in there to help make sure you've got some genetic variation in your population of flies for their health. Also, there seems to be a critical mass factor in terms of how many flies you need to get in there so that they can begin eating the yeast and everything, so that you don't worry about other things growing in there. It just works better. Add at least 50 flies. You could add 100, anywhere between 50 and 100 flies. And they'll also start producing better. You'll get a lot more eggs if you have more flies. It makes sense, right? So I think that's one of the key items here. Make sure you get newly emerged flies and you get at least 50 in there, and you'll do a lot better.
Okay. Anything else that we need to know about?
Well, one thing is that temperature does affect their breeding. That's very important. Room temperatures are generally good, but cooler room temperatures, you get much slower reproductive rates. Warm temperatures, they'll go nuts.
How warm is too warm?
Well, you certainly wouldn't want them over probably 90, 95. I'm not going to say that would kill them, but you could have more problems with mold because it's a humid in the culture, and warm and wet is not, you know, warmer the wetter, and more types of fungus and things grow like crazy. So, but anywhere in room temperature is good. But in the 70s or 80s is probably best, probably mid to high 70s and 80s. Another one: use the flies liberally. Like I said, overcrowding destroys a culture, and you have, you know, several hundred flies hatching a day for a couple of weeks.
So when you feed your fish, give it a really good sprinkle.
Yeah.
A really good dash.
Yeah. Yeah, you really... There have been times when I've had so many flies, if I have several cultures going at once especially, that I've had to literally just dispose of the flies without feeding them the fish just to keep the culture from, you know, overproducing and crashing. So make sure you do something. You could probably freeze them and give them to your fish later if you really had to.
That's a good idea.
I haven't tried that, but you could probably do that. Another thing, let's see. If you get any moldy cultures, throw them out. That's one of the reasons why you should start a new culture as soon as one started. If the older one starts molding, you immediately toss it. You don't want that mold to spread. You don't want to really start a culture with another culture that's moldy if you can help it, because that mold can really spread. But most of the good commercial mixes that you get are good stuff. They work. And they help. They have mold retardants in them and stuff that'll help. Don't allow wild fruit flies to get in. That might sound funny, but the Drosophila melanogaster, at least, is very capable of interbreeding with the common fruit flies you find in your house. And
then whoever else lives in the house with you is not going to be happy that there's fruit flies flying all over the place all of a sudden.
Yeah, and one deal with these wingless and flightless fruit flies is that the gene regulating their mutations with their wings tends to be recessive. And so if one normal wild fruit fly gets into your culture, it might not take very long before you have a whole bunch of flighted fruit flies coming out of there. So that's not a good thing. You don't want that. So make sure they don't get in. Again, the commercial culturing units are really good at keeping them out. I've never had problems with those, getting things coming in or things going out when they're not supposed to. And if you do lose some, one nice thing is, of course, they can't fly, which is great. But some people have reported success if they do accidentally leave a lid off or something like that, putting out some apple cider vinegar, and they'll fall into it and drown and things like that to try to help trap them. But again, with the wingless ones, it's usually not that big of a deal. And that should be about it. Fish love these. If you want to see a feeding frenzy, drop 50 flies on top of a tank full of guppies and wow, see them go. They really love these, and they'll take care of them in just a few seconds flat. It's fun to watch them be so interested. And these flies are very similar to the part of the natural diet of many, many fish. And so it seems to stimulate them both from the standpoint of activity, but also a standpoint of breeding. Getting live insects seems to stimulate a lot of fish to breed. And so they're a great food for them.
Okay.
Guess that's about it. Well, if you're interested in trying this out and you have enough fish or other creatures that'll eat them to make it worth it, I highly suggest you give it a try. It'll be an interesting experience, and your fish will thank you for it. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.